It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, once again, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. It's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio someone who has been here before and has now returned, of course, David Cheesham. Welcome, David.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
And, of course, I have on the phone Zaz Hollander, who's calling in from a far distant location. Tell me where you are, Zaz.
Not that distant today at the Palmer Bureau, the Palmer Tishuk Bureau.
Ah, okay, sometimes you're in Willow, sometimes
yes.
You get around
move
a bit.
Around. Yeah.
Well, let us begin with you because I noticed that as I looked at the Anchorage Daily News that apparently everyone else who reports was sick, on vacation, or something because I saw a spate, I can use that term, a spate of articles with your byline. And I want to run through a few of them for people. Let's start with one that I found fascinating because it included reference to the borough assembly meeting just passed. Mm-hmm. We're talking about timber sales. How about summarizing that for folks?
Yeah, that is the Tijuk Creek timber sale and the associated port lease that was approved by the assembly in April. Philip Manning and I have been talking about it on every program for the last month or more because there's been this understanding that the project is, at least for now, not happening, but no official word. And so both Philip and I have been hearing from the usual sources but couldn't confirm anything. And at the assembly meeting Tuesday night, there were several assembly member Jim Sykes said the project was, I think he even said dead. Mayor Vern Halter said something about how, you know, it's not happening or was speaking in the past tense about it. And so I just figured that now is the time to kind of make it clear to the public what is happening with that project. And so the owner of the company, whose name is on a couple contracts, confirmed yesterday or Wednesday now, I guess it is, that the project has been suspended since late July or August. We didn't know about it for all that time. And when I tried to reach out to various borough officials for more information, I was told that, quote, we're working with legal on these issues, end quote, and that's all we can say. Jim Sykes was the only person, and I did not contact a bunch of assembly members. I probably could have gotten other information from them as well. The people involved in the project, Eric Oyen, the owner of Denali Timber Management, and Charlie Nash, the contractor who's doing the logging, were more than willing to talk about it. The borough was not, although it sounds as if there are any number of legal conversations going on about this and have been for some weeks.
David, do you have a question or comment? No. Okay. What I was struck by, and of course I was at the meeting there witnessing this discussion and question, I was struck by your reference in the article to Eugene Haberman, who has been, we can call him a gadfly,
yes.
Appearing at many meetings, whether the school board or assembly and so on. And toward the end of this meeting, he sort of summarized very nicely, and you pointed to it, saying, where's the money? Follow the money. What's been happening? These contracts were signed.
Where is the information that the public wants to know?
And, exactly.
You know, in this case, everyone who is involved in this project knows what's going on, except the public. You know, all the players, the borough, the companies, are involved in these conversations, but the public has been left out and kind of continues to be at this point.
Right, and also you mentioned that Donna Massey has been sitting in these assembly meetings. I've watched her and watched her face in particular as discussions go on because she lives on the road where many trucks would travel should this all happen. And my impression is that people who live in the area have noticed certain activities or lack of activity as things didn't happen. And there, first of all, was a major promise of something in a large scale in terms of money flowing to the borough in a variety of ways, both for use of the port and for tax monies and so on, that is not happening. And it's still, as you nicely pointed out, up in the air or down on the ground, somewhat complicated further by another piece that you had written earlier describing the spruce beetle kill.
Yeah. And you know, I'm still not clear on the makeup of the actual logs going to China or not going to China. You know, this sale was in part billed as a way to address our spruce beetle infestation by removing trees, which is a way to do that, but also kind of to sell them and make some money off them before we can anymore, which kind of justified the haste at which this whole project was approved in part. And now it's starting to sound like it, at least in the sample that went over to China in November, that most of those logs are birch logs, because the spruce logs really aren't in shape to saw. And the Chinese customers apparently wanted to make saw, you need saw logs, wanted to make lumber and plywood, so a veneer production out of these logs, and that the spruce, at least from what Charlene Nash told me yesterday, just most of those are not in shape for milling anymore. So it's the birch that they're looking for. And there is birch mixed in with those stands. It's a big timber sale.
And yet we have not mentioned the T word, tariff. This apparently has acted, and certainly some of the principals have pointed to it, as the changing economics of doing this in terms of the market for such logs, and in particular, the added costs associated with the tariffs that have been imposed upon various items. And apparently, as I read, it didn't seem that there would be relief for timber as there has been relief for salmon.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. And this is a national issue, particularly, it sounds like, for West Coast timber and log exports, but it's kind of a moving target in terms of what the actual tariffs are. I'd heard 10%, 25%. It was 25% that was floated in August when a lot of these decisions were being made. I believe, at least on and some of the birch, maybe the spruce, it would be a 10%, but maybe at least on spruce, rising to 25%. But if these logs aren't majority spruce, it was never clear to me exactly what the tariff might be. But obviously, in terms of the bottom line for Denali Timber Management, they decided that was a leading factor, they say, in their decision to pull out of the project.
Right.
They haven't logged, apart from a sample, I believe it was 4 log loads that went out in November to China. There's been no additional logging in the Chijuk Creek timber sale since then.
Right. And of course, this also ties up with the hope that the port would have been used for both a lease for the logs that would be there and additionally some port fees as you ship out of it. And once again, the hopes have been somewhat dashed. Right. I think that we can leave the timber as it is for a moment, unless David has David.
I did want to go back to so the borough is not speaking, not answering questions, and they said that there are legal reasons why they can't, or they're being advised. What is that about? Is there a lawsuit involved?
Usually what this means. Yeah,
right.
that Nick Spiropoulos is kind of riding herd over information because they're looking into, you know, I would assume whether Denali Timber Management is in default on their contract. Denali told me that there's some kind of a deferral agreement he's got with the borough because he hasn't paid any rent at the port, even though there are logs from the logging they did do on Aklutna lands in Eagle River at the port. At this point, there have been no kind of rental or other insurance, you know, other payments made to the borough. So I'm assuming, since I haven't been told, that's what Nick and his legal department is looking into, is at what recourses. I mean, there's a fairly elaborate contract. What recourse does the borough have to start getting some money from this company? And at what point do they go into default? From what Eric Oyen told me, it was that he was not in default. The company was not in default. The contract had not been terminated. So.
Fascinating. And do we have an estimate of how much the borough has lost in this whole thing?
Well, you know, at this point, I believe the costs incurred have been to Denali Timber Management. They put in a stormwater drainage system at the port and did some improvements on Oil Well Road, although this parking lot they were supposed to build was never finished because they pulled out before they finished it. There's still big piles of dirt there. So I think that the losses are to future revenues and anticipated revenues.
Okay.
But I don't know that they built a budget around these revenues.
Okay.
Certainly it's yet another, raises questions as to what kind of due diligence is done on these big projects before they're allowed to go forward.
Right.
Okay. Well, let us segue then from timber to whistleblowing. Because that's another topic that I think you have addressed recently. Zaz, how about a quick summary about how to blow a whistle?
Well, how to blow a whistle? I think you start off by being a very persistent pilot who is fired from your job. You say because you complained about safety problems at an air carrier. And so that's what happened back in 2012, a guy named Brian Bell was involved in a number of reports to the FAA about what he saw as safety concerns at a company called Bald Mountain Air Service out of Homer, which also operated the kind of medevac service for Alaska Regional for a time. And so they're carrying people on Bear View in flights, air taxi, medevac. A lot of different businesses, and what Brian Bell said he saw was, and two federal investigations backed him up, was certain safety procedures that were not done or were falsified, drug and alcohol testing, some training requirements that were fudged. And so when he complained to the FAA, the FAA kind of swooped in on Bald Mountain's hangar in Anchorage, got some records. And 2 days after that, Brian Bell was suspended from his job and as he understands it, terminated. I believe he never received official termination, but he wasn't working anymore. He also contended he was blacklisted from the kind of the aviation industry. He didn't get another pilot's job, but a federal judge that was hearing an appeal of an OSHA decision did not find enough evidence to back that up. But his whistleblower claim was affirmed to the tune of, over $500,000 in back wages and other payments that are expected, at least Bell's attorney contends, to total $750,000. Also, he has been ordered to get his job back, but
Whoa.
It's not clear whether anybody wants that. So the attorney said that they may work with Bald Mountain on some kind of, additional monetary settlement. But Bald Mountain's attorney has said that they do plan to appeal this decision, which is they still have that recourse. So it's not 100% settled at this point. He says that there's some legal issues with this most recent administrative finding that backed up an OSHA decision, a federal OSHA decision from 2016. Mm-hmm. So there have been two decisions on this.
So in the meantime, he's still a Uber driver?
He's an Uber, yeah. He's a part-time Uber driver.
Okay.
Or an Uber driver part-time, yeah. Right.
Very good. Well, I'm going to switch focus to another report and an event that brought back many memories for our coverage, and that is a secret report that has been revealed that said the Anchorage police botched an investigation into drug dealing by Alaska National Guard recruiters. Kyle Hopkins wrote that up, but we were intimately involved here doing many, many interviews with a number of the people who were reporting before they finally brought in the National Guard from headquarters in D.C. and actually looked at this. And I was wondering if, David, did you have a chance to look at that? Do you have any sense of what that was about?
Yes, I saw. I read the story. It was amazing. Amazing because, I think many of us thought that story had been concluded with the National Guard, at least the aspect that it's funny how you. You hear these things, and somebody comes in, and you think it's all cleaned up, apparently it's a little bit more difficult than just changing the leadership to to change the culture in an organization like the National Guard. But I guess it looks like there was information being passed between entities that shouldn't have been, and that it messed up the
investigation itself.
Yeah.
So I think the bottom line for me when I looked at that was that it showed a very perhaps inappropriate relationship between the Anchorage Police Department and the Army National Guard, and a situation which resulted in a secret report being conducted, which, as the spokeswoman for the National Guard said at the bottom of the article, that she would need more time to respond to detailed questions about the report because she and other Guard officials had not seen the report until the Daily News provided a copy on Wednesday. I'm saying, okay, so this report was done, but it was not available to the Guard or perhaps to some parts of certainly the public and the police department, and it involved both concerns for the chief of police and a lieutenant of police who's engaged in a suit at the present time. I think this story may be one that we'll be seeing more about. General Katkus, who was at that time head of the National Guard, was essentially relieved. The rest of the story is just beginning to come out, and that was back 4 years ago. So it does have legs, David.
Right. So the report was written 4 years ago about events that had happened.
Yes.
Before that.
Right.
Okay. Do I remember right that the Anchorage is a different chief of police now?
Oh yes. Yeah. There, the police chief Mew back a year or two ago was relieved of duty. He had been involved there, and it's a little bit too complicated and convoluted for us to get into at the present time. It just reminder to listeners that back in 2014, this National Guard scandal was probably one of the major reasons why Governor Sean Parnell lost re-election to Bill Walker.
Right. And resurfaced for Edie Grunwald's lieutenant governor run as well.
Right. So, yes, all kinds of things. Let's leave that for a moment and turn, leave it for more than one moment because we'll be back at it again later, and turn to something that has dominated political discussion here in the state. And that was the astounding resignation. I don't know, I'm going to just use that word because you can fill it with all kinds of things to say when Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott resigned 3 weeks or so before the election, a lot of people said, what? And are still asking, what does it mean? In part because the governor then took the lieutenant governor designee that existed, elevated her, Davidson, to the position of lieutenant governor, also brought her along on the Walker campaign now, which is now the Walker-Davidson campaign, even though, as you wander about, you see still many of the Walker Mallott signs, and you have a number of early absentee ballots that have been mailed out, and anyone who will be voting in the general election in November will be voting, looking down and seeing Walker Mallott, with the understanding that should the governor prevail and win, Mallott, who has resigned his position, and even though he's on the ballot, will not become the lieutenant governor, and it's complicated both psychologically, politically, legally. So, Zaz, you haven't been writing about this, but I'm going to ask you and David, just for your observation, let's start with David first. What was your initial reaction when you heard this?
Well, first of all, shock, because whatever the incident was, there was a powerful lack of judgment involved in the Me Too era to do that and whatever the comment was. Then, you know, to see the campaign for governor, the political campaign just suddenly take a turn in a completely different direction. The whole dynamic has changed now. It is looking like, unless there's something new, it's looking like Walker is not going to resign from the campaign, which I guess that's not too surprising when you're at that level. There's an immense amount of ego compelling, you know, involved in your decisions, and it's just psychologically devastating to give up at that point, even though it's a real uphill battle. But just this, I don't think anybody knows what's going to happen next.
Mm-hmm. Zaz, reaction, comments, thoughts you had?
Yeah, we'd heard some mutterings that Simon Mallott was resigning, that there was a press conference being hastily arranged, but nobody could really believe it. It was really a shock. We'd had a number of reporters, you know, covering a debate the night before, and, you know, in hindsight, there were few signs that anything was wrong, except Governor Walker didn't quite seem, or really didn't seem himself, seemed flustered isn't the right word. But off his usual game and kind of withdrawn. And there's still, I am not reporting the story, but as far as I know officially, there are no new explanations as to what the former lieutenant governor said or to whom he said it, only that it was inappropriate comments made to a woman and not in the context of his job.
Okay.
But the new lieutenant governor can do a seal call, which is pretty cool.
She has been described very often as a brilliant woman with a long history, good background, particularly in Medicaid issues. And as Commissioner of Health and Human Services, she certainly understands many issues, has the respect of many people. It's just that coming in at this point, wondering what can she, how's that going to work?
Yeah. She certainly could have done that ticket good maybe earlier in the campaign season.
Right. The other point that I would make is that Governor Walker was here in our studios, and Kenny Pasenik Linden did an interview. That interview will be broadcast, I give fair warning, at 5. All of the interviews of people running in the November election or in contested races have been interviewed as they have responded yes. And Governor Walker was one of those who responded. He was in the Valley, came to the studios. We interviewed him, have a wonderful half-hour interview. And that after Sunday night will be up on our website. So if someone is interested in hearing him. Now, this occurred Monday at 1:30 in the afternoon. And some of the indications I had was that he became aware of Lieutenant Governor Mallott's situation, or there was a decision that occurred after that interview, because I would invite you to listen to the interview. My impression, it was a wonderful interview as I observed it. And I thought that he, while not stressing the presence of Lieutenant Governor Mallott, he spoke about the unity ticket in such a way that I did not pick up anything that suggested what was going to be revealed shortly thereafter. So just throw that out, and people can listen and make their own determinations. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you both for participating in this week's edition of Valley Edition. David, you came in here. There's a little bit of a wind outside, but you managed to make it in. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
And Zaz, thank you for doing all that writing and research that fed into what we were talking about today. And I hope if you are here in this Palmer area that you survive what appears to be a little bit of the Palmer wind.
We've got it up here on Fishhook as well.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay.
Happy to be here, Mike.
All right. Thank you. We'll be back next week with another edition of Valley Edition.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.